Wisconsin. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the Spotlight from Mikko Vatahui. An entire team is goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Top stories, the U.S. deploys more troops to Poland as Ukraine plays down Western speculations of a potential Russian invasion of the country. The mayor of Canada's capital, Ottawa, declares a state of emergency over continued protests against COVID restrictions. And a new report says gun violence is on the rise in U.S. schools, with more students falling victim during the current school year than at any point in the previous decade. Those were the top stories of Welcome. More U.S. troops arrive in southeastern Poland following an order by President Joe Biden. This is the latest development in the ongoing standoff between the West and Moscow over Ukraine. Over the past few days, a series of U.S. elite forces, advanced groups, and military vehicles arrived in an airport near the Polish border with Ukraine. On Friday, Biden called for the deployment of 3,000 extra troops to Poland and Romania. These measures follow Western accusations that Russia is planning an invasion of Ukraine. The Eastern European country says it does not believe such predictions, but is prepared to face any developments with the help of international support. Russia dismisses the allegations, saying Washington is trying to drag it into war by creating tensions near Russian borders. Dmitry Zolotarev joins us. He's a journalist who comes to you live via Skype out of the Russian city of Irkutsk to share with us his opinion about the recent developments. Dmitry, would you say that we have entered a new phase? Do you say that this is just a drag of the previous phase and nothing serious is at least going to come out of this phase?
Well, as I see it, it's just another show off from the world champion of lies, the United States government. The fact is, they just using any pretext to impose more sanctions or pressure on Russia. So that's what we see is the same thing happening that has been happening for two decades or more. So it has been happened to Iraq. It has been happened. It happened to Libya, and now they're using Ukraine as a pretext. They create fake allegations, absolutely not unsubstantiated, to show in the Western media that Russia is preparing to full-scale war and wants to destroy Ukraine, so on and so forth. The fact is that all those moves of the United States troops to Europe is just another way of the United States and NATO to come closer to Russian borders. And as a bonus, since we're speaking about the Ukrainian government, we're speaking about absolutely unprofessional people in any approach, especially in political approach, and they might think that that's a another signal for them to start assault against the Eastern Ukrainian republics, I mean Lugansk Republic and Donetsk Republic, which might trigger tensions and between Russia or provoke Russia to support those republics, and that might trigger another wave of full-scale war in Ukraine, but which is generally nothing to do with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that the United States government makes allegations which are absolutely unsubstantiated, and even the United States press, I'm addressing to Matthew Lee, the reporter for Associated Press, which was questioning the White House speaker for a pretty big while about the facts, about the proof of their allegations, which there are none, and they can't give anything. And Matthew Lee generally accused the United States government of unsubstantiated lies again and again and again. So they are trying to make the scene of, about Russia, that Russia is threatening Ukraine, and Western media, even Western media, not to mention the Western intelligent society, don't believe the United States government and European press also.
Mm-hmm.
Which was posting fake news about Russian invasion of Ukraine. I'm speaking about Bild and Bloomberg, which is which are generally synonyms to false flag. So false flag is one kind of sports on which the United States and Europe are champions, champions of the universe.
Many thanks, Dmitry. That's Dmitry Zolotarev. He's a journalist. Out of Russian city of Irkutsk, who spoke to us on that situation. Many, many thanks for your time, Dmitry, and have a very good day. The mayor of the Canadian capital, Ottawa, has declared a state of emergency to deal with truckers' days-long demonstrations in the city. Jim Watson says protesters camped out in the capital far outnumber the police and control the situation. He says it's the protesters that are, quote, calling the shots now. He made the comment as a demonstration against coronavirus vaccine mandates has clogged parts of the city for a tenth day. Similar protests have been held in other cities, namely Toronto and Quebec City. A movement called Freedom Convoy began on January the 22nd against the Canadian vaccine requirement for cross-border truckers, but it quickly morphed into protest against COVID restrictions and the government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Organizers now say they're expecting their numbers to swell into tens of thousands. A new report says gun violence is on the rise in U.S. schools, with more students falling victim to shooting incidents during the current academic year than before. Figures show campuses have seen a record 141 shootings so far. Researchers who've studied gun culture among students believe the situation will get worse. Half of teachers say they want to quit or retire early as a result of the stress and challenges of the rising gun violence. Experts cite the COVID-19 pandemic increases in overall community violence and breakdowns in family structures and the factors behind the gun violence. The availability of guns is also another contributing factor. Reports show consistent monthly record gun sales in the U.S. Experts say many of these guns that are not secured in homes are easily accessible to teens. Racial tensions heating up in the U.S. again, with hundreds of protesters turning out in Minneapolis to demand justice for a young African-American killed by police. The death has reopened the wounds caused by the police murder of George Floyd 2 years ago and renewed debates over rampant racism and police violence in the U.S. city.
Is it a racist system?
U.S.
Texas police violence targeting black people has once again brought Americans to the streets in the northern city of Minneapolis, which is still reeling from the police murder of George Floyd, a black man, in 2020. This time, the victim is Amir Locke, a 22-year-old African-American who was killed when police stormed into his apartment without warning on Wednesday. Hundreds of protesters rallied in the city, calling for the arrest of officers involved in the shooting and an end to discriminatory law enforcement tactics. Similar protests were held in New York City. The officers were carrying out a no-knock search warrant on the apartment. The city's mayor has now announced a suspension of no-knock warrants that have been at the center of heated debates over rising police violence. Back in 2020, the city restricted the use of such unannounced raids as part of a series of reforms that were introduced following mass anti-racism protests.
They barge in before they ever identify themselves, and they give Amir no time to save his own life. And that's something that we don't see white citizens encounter. And the fact that it's happening in Minneapolis again is beyond tragic. It's abhorrent.
Locke's parents say their son was a beloved member of his community and a law-abiding citizen.
I believe that he was executed by the MPD, and I want the police officer that murdered my son to be prosecuted and fired.
Locke's death has reopened the wounds caused by the murder of Floyd and a dozen of other recent victims. Official figures show that black men are three times more likely than white men to be killed by police during their lifetime. But police bullets, batons, or knees are not the only concerns to African Americans. The deep-rooted anti-black racism also shows itself in inadequate access to health care, food, housing, and jobs. In 2020, the injustices long felt by African Americans triggered a nationwide protest movement challenging police brutality and bias in the U.S. criminal justice system. And that movement transformed into a global campaign to fight racism and build a world free of discrimination and supremacist ideologies.
The Scottish Energy Secretary has expressed concern about the impact of a surge in energy prices in the UK. Earlier, we discussed that issue with our guests in our news review program.
Welcome to the news review segment, where we discuss one of our top stories with our guests. The Scottish Government's Energy Secretary raises the alarm about the consequences of an ongoing hike in energy prices in the UK. Take a listen.
Do you think people will die as a result of what's happening or what's going to happen in April?
I think Audrey is right, and I think that's a real risk and why the action that's being proposed by the UK government last week is insufficient to deal with the scale and the nature of the crisis which many individuals, particularly low-income households, are now facing. And with the
Michael Matheson says in Scotland alone, up to 900,000 homes could be either in fuel poverty or extreme fuel poverty. Britain's energy regulator, Ofgem, has said bills will see a record high of nearly £700 a year from April. That will be a rise of over 50%. UK inflation is also on course to increase above 7% this year. That could leave households facing the biggest income squeeze in decades. Now, let me welcome our guests to this edition of News Review. Both joining us from London, we have Amina Taylor, our correspondent, and also Rodney Shakespeare, a professor of economics and political commentator, also from London. Thank you both for joining us on this edition of News Review. Let me just kick it off with Amina. Michael Matheson says there is a real risk that lives could be lost. What do the figures tell us?
Well, unfortunately, that's just north of the border. If you extrapolate that from considering that population is around, 5 million or so compared to the UK's over 60, Rishi Sunak's proposal, his solution to this spike in energy crisis and the squeeze, the inevitable squeeze on people's income, is to hand out about a £200 loan for these families that they have to pay back. Not a grant, not a gift, not some kind of offset, but a loan. And I think it just shows just how out of touch one of our richest members of the cabinet would be to the people whose lives he has in his very hands. Because we all saw this coming. I remember being right here on this channel talking about the energy squeeze a little bit earlier last year. And every year we have a similar conversation where pre-COVID, even before we were looking at this rise in interest rates and the end of the furlough scheme for many people, and before we were paralyzed by the mismanagement of the economy by some sections of this government, you still had individuals who had to make a very stark choice, whether they eat or whether they put the heating on. And unfortunately, when you're going to have a 50% jump for the average household, that's going to be some £1,200 just for your energy. And remember, that also has supply chain issues. So it's not just going to stop at the energy bill. The very products you buy, these prices all are going to be passed on to the consumer. And as a percentage of your income, it's always the lower. The poorer earners, those who are already on the breadline, who are going to suffer even more. I mean, it's unconscionable from this government, I'm afraid.
Thank you, Amina. Let me cross over to Professor Rodney Shakespeare. What's your analysis of the figures? And how far into the future do you think the price hikes can stretch? And also, what do you think of the measures that have been proposed or taken to deal with the crisis? Are they adequate or far from it?
This is an outrage. £700 for a poor family means, as Amina has just said, it's a strict choice between food or heating. And what is particularly outrageous is that at this very moment, there is a solution to it, and it's called Nord Stream 2. A massive, great gas pipeline, 7 years in the building, has been completed and is full of gas and is capable of passing that gas into Europe now. But because the Americans are saying, oh, we must hurt Russia, they think they will hurt Russia by stopping that gas coming into Europe. But look what is happening and doing to the people of the United Kingdom and the people right the way through Europe. You see, that pipeline represents that last part of the gas, the spot price, which up the price going straight the way up like this. The solution is here. It is now. It can be done at the snap of my fingers. It's called the Nord Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. It is ready, it is available, but because the Europeans are complete utter cowards and won't stand up to America, look at what is happening. And yes, people will die as a result of that choice between food and heating.
Thank you both for joining us on this edition of News Review. I've been talking to Amina Taylor, our correspondent in London. Amina, thank you for your input. And also to Professor Rodney Shakespeare, a professor of economics and political commentator, also joining us from London.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, www.mathison.org/en. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sin.
Islamic Revolution revives a Muslim woman's model. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in the 10 days done, the period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Iran's Islamic Revolution triumphed with the presence of the whole Iranian nation from all walks of life. Yet, women played a very outstanding and effective role in this regard. Before the revolution, the Western view on women was dominant in Iran, and the Shah regime had done its best to fight all human values in women to turn them into the tool of implementing the American and European goals in the country. The instrumental look on women had begun since 19th century and reached Iran in early 20th century, but it reached its climax in 1970s with the growth of materialistic thoughts and technological and cinematic progress. Thus, secularism spread all over the country. This thought deemed no value for religion in society and politics, and limited it to individual life. Europe and the United States were introduced as the examples of progress and ideal life, and religion was introduced as the enemy of modernism and progress. The first ruler of the Pahlavi regime, Reza Khan Mir Panj, was an illiterate and self-conceited man who was a servile stooge of colonialists. In view of this, he blindly followed the dictates of his masters in the West, and as one of his first steps in modernizing Iran, he ordered the prohibition of hijab by women. Thus, the military and police of the regime would beat women and force them to remove their chador and scarf in public. Many ladies preferred not to go outdoors for years to keep their chastity and dignity. As his date was expired, Reza Khan was dethroned by the British, and his equally servile son, Mohammad Reza, was brought to the throne by Britain. Mohammad Reza continued his father's path. He left no stone unturned to change the Iranian lifestyle into a Western one. He himself was a licentious man to the extent that some writers wrote down his immoral, behind-the-scene lifestyle in their books and memoirs. Ali Shahbazi was one of the forces of the Shah's special guard who wrote in his memoir, "From the time of Asadullah Alam's premiership, his ministry had set up a special center for entertainment of Shah. Their job was to bring married women, beautiful girls or wives, and daughters of those who wanted to obtain a position for the Shah." The great leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, said on the oppression and injustices that women had suffered during the Pahlavi regime, "Woman has been oppressed in two phases. One was during the Jahiliya, or the period of pre-Islam ignorance, which Islam did a favor to human being and took woman out of the injustice and oppression she was in. The other one was in our Iran that woman was oppressed, and it was during the era of the former Shah and his successor. Claiming that they want to liberate woman, they wronged women. They took woman down from the position of nobility and dignity that she had. They turned woman from the position of a spirituality into an object. And in the name of freedom, free women and free men, they took freedom away from woman and man and made women and youth immoral." Imam Khomeini believed that woman has a dignified and lofty status. She can reach the highest degree of spirituality while engaging in scientific, political, and social activities. He said that the ultimate goal for mankind, regardless of their gender, is to get proximity of God. Being a servant of God and worshiping Him is not limited to gender. The Imam said, "Woman is a human, and that's a great human. Woman is the educator of society. It is from the woman's lap that humans are trained. It is from the woman's lap that man ascends to heavens. Happiness and misery of countries depend on woman. Woman makes human being through her correct training and develops the country through her correct training." Imam Khomeini then refers to the view of Islam and the beautiful conduct of the Prophet of Islam toward woman, saying, "The history of Islam is witness to the unbounded respect of the Messenger of God to his daughter. To this noble child, Lady Zahra, peace be upon her, to show that woman holds a special greatness in society to the extent that, if it is not superior to man, it is not less than him." Imam Khomeini used to recommend women to strive in acquisition of knowledge and attaining moral virtues, as they are the source of happiness and every good thing for society. Years into the victory of the Islamic Revolution, effective efforts have been made to survive women's dignity in Iran. Muslim women of Iran have achieved many progresses in a variety of domains, such as sciences, sports, technologies, arts, and so on. They have strongly proved that having hijab is by no means an obstacle on the way of reaching pinnacles of progress. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says, "Woman, in the logic of Islam, has a perfect model and a structure. An Islamic woman is the creature which has faith and chastity. She holds the most important part of training human being. She is effective in society. She has scientific and spiritual growth. She is the administrator of the very important family center and the source of calm for the male gender. All these exist beside female characteristics like fineness, tender-heartedness, and preparedness for reception of divine rights. And this is the model of the Islamic woman. On the contrary, there has always been a deviated model in history. Today, that deviated model is the Western woman, whose characteristic, instead of those outstanding and lofty ones which we mention for Islamic woman, is to be able to draw the attention of men and please them. Thus, the Western woman is characterized by nakedness. You can see that a man should be fully clothed in their ceremonies, while a woman should be as naked as possible."
Hearty congratulations to all our listeners on the 43rd 10-day dawn celebrations marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution.
everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a program that will address the most important issues in the South Asian region which affect the governments, organization, and especially the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this special edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss ways in which the Islamic Revolution, spearheaded by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, echoed far and wide, including in the Himalayan region of Kashmir. And we shall also delve into the tremendous impact of the 1979 revolution in neighboring Afghanistan and Pakistan and India.
Soon after the pro-West regime in Iran was toppled through a popular social-political movement in 1979, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, declared that the revolution will challenge the arrogant powers across the world. The idea was incorporated in the country's constitution, affirming Iran's support for the oppressed against the oppressors. It later gave shape to a revolutionary movement that took the Islamic world by storm, including the South Asian region.
What began as a popular nationwide uprising against the hideous plot to westernize Iran later transformed into a global movement against despotism, tyranny, and hegemonic schemes of arrogant powers. Nations took inspiration from Imam Khomeini's spirited resistance to free his country from the clutches of foreign powers. Over the past four decades, the movement has gripped the hearts and minds of people everywhere. Among the regions greatly influenced by the Islamic Revolution is the picturesque Himalayan region of Kashmir, a contested Muslim-majority territory ravaged by decades of conflict. This abode of Sufis and saints, which embraced Islam in the 14th century at the hands of Iranian missionaries like Mir Sayyid Ali Hamadani, adopted Imam Khomeini's revolution in letter and spirit. Since 1979, pro-resistance groups in the region have used Iran's Islamic Revolution as a powerful mechanism to mobilize masses against forces that perpetuate injustices and snatch people's fundamental rights.
In the whole subcontinent, Islamic Revolution of Iran, especially the struggle of great people like Imam Khomeini and all those people, Shahid Mutahhari and Ayatollah Abdul Hussein Dastagheib. We have long list of everybody who participated and supported Imam. There are more Islamic seminaries. There are more religious awareness. More people are turning away from the secularism and going towards the religious schools and preparing their sons and daughters and their next generation to understand Islam, especially the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, more deeply. And there is a great awareness among the people, which would never have been possible without this great revolution that is not only just from the social point of view, but also from the political and religious point of view.
The appeal of Imam Khomeini's resistance manual cuts across the sectarian lines, with both Shias and Sunnis crediting him for reinvigorating their struggle for freedom from oppression, subjugation, and occupation. Today, the biggest rallies to mark the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution outside Iran are held in the cities of Srinagar and Kargil. Streets in both the cities are dotted with pictures and banners, paying tribute to Imam Khomeini and his intrepid companions.
Islamic Revolution of Iran has an impact on hearts and minds of Kashmiris over the past few decades. And you know, I believe it still lives in our hearts as a society and community. Now, I also believe that it has harnessed our inner belief to rise above the basic evil thought process of sectarian divide and how to revolutionize and evolve our stand for communal harmony on humanitarian grades.
Be it Yemen, Syria, Palestine, or the Valley of Kashmir, the Islamic Revolution in Iran has set up an example for all the people living in chaotic and politically unstable regions. It not only inspires us to be strong while we are at the verge of losing hope, but also teaches us the responsibilities that we should bear so that we can together overthrow the oppressive powers and walk the path of justice.
The wave of the Islamic revival fueled by the 1979 Islamic Revolution has engulfed the entire region. To invoke the Islamic Revolution, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said it's akin to the scent of spring flowers carried by the breeze to different corners of the Islamic world. In Kashmir, the scent seems to feel more strongly, partly because of Imam Khomeini's deep and personal affiliation with the region. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has also followed the same roadmap of what is known today as the world's most militarized zone.
When Imam Khomeini, during his exile in France, was asked by a French journalist where he would prefer to go if his asylum was revoked, his answer was Kashmir. His choice wasn't anything strange. Earlier, while in Iraq, he had exchanged a series of letters with the then top Shia cleric in Kashmir, Sayyid Yusuf Musavi, who had invited him to Kashmir. The unshakable allegiance of Kashmiris to the ideals of Islamic revolution has to be seen in the context of the advocacy of their long-standing political struggle by both Imam Khomeini and his worthy successor. Imam Khomeini, way back in 1965, during a speech in Najaf, had equated Kashmir with Palestine. Imam Khomeini, known for his plain speech, has often emphasized the just struggle of Palestinians and Kashmiris.
Islamic revolution is the hope for the people, oppressed people across the world. Islamic revolution is one of the important historical incidents of the 20th century. We cannot ignore this because of this that caused many historic events and social and political changes across the world. In our region, in Jammu, Kashmir and Ladakh, we have seen so many, many modernist reforms that people have become very conscious. They inspired from Islamic revolution and ideology of Imam Khomeini.
People in the Himalayan region, most notably Srinagar and Kargil, today draw spiritual and resistance leadership from Iran. They celebrate the triumph of the Islamic Revolution and mourn the martyrs of the Holy Defense. They burn the effigies of Trump and Pompeo and hold memorials for Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. This is the miracle of Imam Khomeini and his revolutionary legacy.
The influence of the Islamic Revolution has over the years extended far and wide, leaving virtually no part of the subcontinent untouched. In Muslim-majority Pakistan, the wave of the 1979 revolution, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini, enveloped the country in the early 1980s as a response to Takfiri extremism. People saw it as a revolutionary movement aimed at Islamic revival. More than four decades later, a vast majority of Muslims in the South Asian country are vocal adherents of the Imam Khomeini school of resistance.
Under Pakistan's former military dictator, Zia-ul-Haq, a deeply sinister project of Islamization was unleashed, which essentially used Islam as an instrument to consolidate his political power. In contrast, the Islamic Revolution came with a purpose and attracted many followers. Soon after the Islamic Revolution in 1979, under the spiritual leadership of Imam Khomeini, Pakistani Shias came together for the first time to form Tehreek-e-Jafariya Pakistan. The spread of the Islamic Revolution in Pakistan coincided with the rise of Wahhabi Takfirism, bankrolled by Arab regimes, which in turn led to killings of many prominent Shia leaders like Allama Arif Hosseini. Known as Khomeini-e-Pakistan, Martyr Arif Hosseini was the founder of Tehreek-e-Jafariya. The violence, however, did not deter the leadership.
Martyrdom of Arif Hosseini was definitely the result of Pakistani support to Islamic revolution. And the state very much, had to do a lot of, struggle to find out the culprits. But We know that. There have been many other, you know, successive assassinations of prominent Shia denominational leadership in Pakistan. It was only because of the tension between the powers and activists between the supporters of Islamic Revolution and the opponents of or the people who are somehow still this tension is still prevailing there, but the religious awareness, the struggle against the resistance, and the voice of the oppressed people. For example, the resistance against Israel and the support for Palestinians became very stronger.
Many social and political groups came into being over the years inspired by the Islamic Revolution. Today, many leading political organizations in Pakistan owe their existence to the same revolution. Majlis-e Wahdat-e Muslimin, founded in 2009, indefatigably espouses the political cause of minorities in Pakistan. Most of its leaders are drawn from the Imamiyah Students Organization, one of the largest student organizations in the country, with 800 branches and almost 26,000 members. ISO's activities are inspired by the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini. Many of its members have been martyred in recent years, fighting Daesh under the banner of Zainabiyun.
Although successive governments in New Delhi reluctantly embraced the Islamic Republic after 1979, Muslims in the Hindu-majority country were also exposed to the currents of the Islamic Revolution. Since the country boasts of around 200 million Muslims, the ruling elites in New Delhi have long chosen to tread cautiously. With the BJP in power, things appear to be changing now. On the other side, the Islamic Revolution has had deepest sway in neighboring Afghanistan, where many top Afghan leaders across the ideological spectrum have taken inspiration from Imam Khomeini.
India is home to the second largest Muslim population in the world after Indonesia. The country also has the second most Shia concentration in the world after Iran. Indian Muslims in general and Indian Shias in particular have been known for deep ideological and religious ties with the Islamic Republic, even though their patriotism has never been in question. The ideals of the Islamic Revolution have a large audience in the country, which is evident in massive pro-Iran demonstrations. On International Quds Day, for instance, large rallies are held in big cities like New Delhi, Mumbai, Hyderabad, and Lucknow. On Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani's assassination 2 years ago, thousands of people took to the streets across India to reaffirm their support for the resistance axis.
The Islamic Revolution of 1979 gave an international identity to the Muslims of India and the subcontinent, especially the Shias. People still idolize many Iranians in all walks of their life. For example, in the CAA protests, where students were lathi charged by the police. A group of students resorted to giving red roses to the policemen, which is an inspiration from what Imam Khomeini had ordered the Iranians to do during the Islamic Revolution of 1979.
Islamic Revolution led by Imam Khomeini not only changed the mindset of people regarding politics, but also changed the beliefs of people regarding religion. It taught us that we should not keep politics away from religion.
In Afghanistan, the erstwhile Hizb-e Wahdat-e-Islami, founded by the late Hazara leader Abdul Ali Mazari, was the outcome of efforts made by the Islamic Revolution ideologues. Mazari had close ties with Imam Khomeini. His successors, Karim Khalili and Muhammad Muhaqqiq, later maintained those ties. Although the organization became a shadow of its past following the killing of Mazari in 1995. The influence of the Islamic Revolution in Afghanistan also saw thousands of youths defending the holy shrines from Daesh terrorists in Syria under the banner of Fatemiyun Brigade. The victory against the terrorist group was made possible by these valiant warriors.
Islamic Revolution of Iran has a huge contemporary significance. for the Muslim Ummah across the globe. It shows us, it gives us a hope that even in today's times, when everything has become so complex, with societies losing their basic fabric to illogical hijab bans or Islamophobia, if I may say, Islamophobia on an all-time high, nevertheless, the revolution has a direct impact on each of our lives. Every day we see stories that inspire us. We have people to look forward to, people who stand against injustice and trying to put into action the teachings of peace, brotherhood, justice, tolerance, and all this in the light of divine religion of Islam.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Sayyid Ruhullah Mousavi, former minister and legislator of Kashmir. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini affirmed the Islamic Republic of Iran's support to the oppressed against the oppressors worldwide. Now, do you think this has helped the Islamic Revolution become a worldwide phenomenon?
Hello. Hello to you and your audience. Thanks for having me. The Islamic Revolution post-1979 became an worldwide phenomenon, especially the approach towards Israel issue, the Palestinian issue, the rights for Palestinian existence, which became the center of its worldview, and the way Iran, especially post-revolution, behaved in favor of the oppressed, has helped the revolution spread across as a mean for those who were oppressed to get a voice. It gave voice to the oppressed who were not heard of as strongly as post-revolution. And you can see many such instances even today playing internationally, where we see people in Yemen and people in Iraq taking their strength from the principles of the Islamic Revolution, where the oppressed get strength and the voice is given to the oppressed, and moral support is given to the oppressed. So all the events, world events, especially in Middle East from 1979 to this day, suggest that the Islamic Revolution became an instrument of a voice, instrument of strength. The oppressed people derive their moral strength from the Islamic Revolution, which reflects from the Palestinian issue and the issues in Middle East, so to speak, about Iraq and Yemen particularly.
Mr. Mousavi, the movement aimed at Islamic revival, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini in the early 1980s, reverberated across the globe. Now, could you tell us more on its overall impact in Kashmir?
See, in Kashmir, the events have to be taken into context. The Islamic Revolution of Iran came in 1979, which was a very successful Islamic event. And soon after that, the Afghans took courage, and they derived the courage from this event. And we saw as a result of which, we saw the withdrawal of Soviet forces from Afghanistan. So in the course of a decade, we saw two superpowers, quote-unquote superpowers of that time, who had to withdraw from their interests, the countries of interest. In case of America, the Shah had to withdraw and leave the country. And in case of Afghanistan, the other superpower of the time, Soviet Union, had to leave the country and withdraw from that. So these events which took place, the Kashmiris also thought, the people in Kashmir also took the courage and moral they identified with the strength of this ideology. And though it may not be from me as a subscriber to a particular thought, but as an observer, I am giving this answer. The people in Kashmir derived their strength from these two facts and thought that the voice they wanted to be heard can be heard, and they came out courageously after these events. And since that time to this time, Kashmiris have seen, as a matter of fact, the revolution of Iran a moral support, which gives them the courage to speak to the power, and they feel that they, while being oppressed of the circumstances, they have something to look up to, an ideology like Islamic Revolution that helped the people in Afghanistan to drive courage as well, and therefore the people in Kashmir drive the strength from this, where the oppressed is given the strength and the moral support from Iran.
So today we see the biggest rallies outside Iran on the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Kashmir in cities like Srinagar and Kargil. What social political factors would you attribute to it?
Again, this is the result of the success of the Islamic Revolution in Iran and the success of the same moral support and moral ideology, if we may want to put it that way, that was identical that we saw against Soviet Union in Afghanistan. A culture of courage while being oppressed developed in Kashmir as well, because the political circumstances were such, the people in Kashmir identified themselves with the people of Iran and Afghanistan. So since that time, it has become a culture in Kashmir where the people drive this moral support from the events of past, and they identify themselves with this ideology, which began from Iran, came to Afghanistan, and the different parts of the world where the oppressors were voiceless, developed a culture of hope and resistance. One is that. The other thing is you have to take this into account. The faith plays a very important role when you see the processions, the amount of people coming on to celebrate the days of Islamic Republic, the anniversary of revolution. There's a particular element of faith, because post-revolution, the sections of the society, particularly in Kashmir, of sections of this faith were, voiceless. They were, they had some sort of an identity crisis vis-a-vis the world all over. After these events, they could identify themselves at the world stage. They could find themselves an element, important part of at the world stage, identifying themselves with the Islamic Revolution. So this courage, this faith, and this political atmosphere, this all cultivated into an atmosphere, this grew up into an atmosphere where you see people coming out on streets to celebrate this anniversary or this ideology, both in terms of faith, both in terms also in terms of culture and moral support.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Ruhollah Mousavi for his precious time, knowledge, and insight. Now, let's see what people have been saying on social media.
Kashmir-based medical practitioner Dr. Abid Hussain cites a famous quote of the founder of the Islamic Revolution to stress that scholars must not justify the rule of barbaric, brutal regimes. Zulfaqar Ali, a seminary student from Kashmir, shares a picture from the International Quds Day rally in central Kashmir in which a Kashmiri child is seen trampling on the flag of the Zionist regime. A Twitter user shares a historic picture from 1980, 1 year after the Islamic Revolution, when Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei visited Kashmir. A Twitter user, Zahra Mousavi, pays tribute to Martyr Muhammad Ali Naghvi, a leader of Pakistani Shias and a follower of Imam Khomeini, who played a key role in popularizing the Islamic Revolution in Pakistan. Nishan Wani, a Kashmir-based TV journalist, posts a clip of massive protests in Shia-majority Kargil city following the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, with protesters chanting anti-US slogans.
And that was our special episode about the impact and influence of Iran's Islamic Revolution in the South Asian region. Thank you for your time, everyone. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take good care.
In the limelight.